to use the easel?
I'm sorry?
Do you want to use the easel?
I may, Your Honor.
Why don't you go ahead and bring it over? You may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the Court. I am George Somerville, counsel for the plaintiffs, Richard and Cynthia Owens. My intention is to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal. This case arose from the bungled restoration of a 1960 Ford Thunderbird. The trial court granted a motion to strike the plaintiff's evidence in a jury trial on their fraud and Virginia Consumer Protection Act claims on what appear to be alternative grounds. First, with the testimony of two witnesses, the defendant Daniel Short and Mr. Alex Teese, was believable and credible. And second, that there was no credible evidence of fraud. As to the first of those grounds, for the trial court to grant a motion to strike in a jury trial based on the court's evaluation of the credibility of witnesses is clearly an error, and I don't think I need to say anything more about that. At the petition stage, I thought the more difficult issue was whether the decision could be sustained on the alternative ground, whether proof of a claim under the Virginia Consumer Protection Act, the VCPA, requires proof of fraud. But the appellees have essentially conceded that issue on their brief. They agree that, that proof of fraud is not necessary to make out a claim under the VCPA. If the court has any questions on that issue, I'll be pleased to try to answer them. But otherwise, I will move on to what I think is the only remaining issue in the case, which is whether the evidence was sufficient to go to the jury, or in other words, whether the trial court was right for the wrong reason. The evidence was sufficient on several grounds to sustain a verdict that the defendants were guilty of actionable misrepresentation in violation of the VCPA and even fraud. The standard is well settled by many decisions of this court. On a motion to strike, the trial court may not reject any inference from the evidence favorable to the plaintiff unless it would defy logic and common sense. That's from the Austin case cited in our opening brief at 16. The inference that these defendants violated the VCPA, it does not violate logic or common sense. It is clear, it is compelling. It is undisputed that on July 13, 2012, the day that Mr. Teese met with Mr. Short and sold him the donor car, Mr. Teese posted that car for sale on Craigslist for $2,000 and said that was negotiable. There is documentary evidence provided by Craigslist that Mr. Short sent an email to Mr. Teese through that Craigslist ad, which means that he had to have seen that Craigslist ad. Now, the defendants have suggested that maybe someone at DRS other than Mr. Short sent that email. Well, that frankly is pure speculation. There are 7 emails in the record from Mr. Short from that email address. There are none from anyone else. They are at pages 38, 581, 588, 596, 598, 601, and 624 in the appendix. But even if somebody else at DRS sent that email, it's still an email from the defendant, DRS, to Mr. Teese. It's undisputed that Mr. Teese called Mr. Short, not just DRS, he called Mr. Short 12 minutes after the time of that email. It is undisputed that Mr. Teese neither knew nor had ever heard of either Mr. Short or DRS before he sold him the donor car. And if that's accurate, then the only way that Mr. Teese could have gotten Mr. Short's phone number was from that missing email. The only direct documentary evidence of Mr. Short's payment for the donor vehicle is a check in the amount of $2,000, the exact amount for which it was listed for sale on Craigslist that day. Mr. Short noted Crown Victoria in the memo line of the check. No suggestion that it was a partial payment. Mr. Short did not get a receipt for what he says was a $4,000 cash payment. And no one can account for what happened to that $4,000. A reasonable jury could infer from all of that evidence that the testimony of the two witnesses was not credible, and the DRS cheated Mr. and Mrs. Owens when it claimed that it paid $6,000 for the car, not $2,000, and charged them $7,500, including a purported 25% markup. But that's not all. DRS's website represented that Mr. Short had certifications in multiple automotive restoration fields. Mr. Short admitted at trial that that was not true. There is evidence that the defendants falsely represented that the donor car engine was certified. The VCPA prohibits misrepresentation of the certification of goods or services. Here we have both. The defendants misrepresented Mr. Short's experience. He told Mr. and Mrs. Owens that he had a lot of experience in using donor cars to restore antique vehicles. But he admitted at trial that DRS had used donor cars twice in 2 years. That is an utter deception, false pretense, or misrepresentation in violation of Section 59.1-200A14. There's also evidence that the defendants falsely represented that the donor car would be purchased at an auction. VCPA prohibits misrepresenting the source of goods. Put all of that together, it's more than enough to go to the jury on both the VCPA and fraud. The court must consider the record as a whole and grant plaintiffs the benefit of all reasonable inferences in determining whether the trial court erred in granting the motion to strike. I believe that when you do that in this case, you will hold that the judgment must be reversed and the case must be remanded for a new trial. If the court has any questions, I'd be pleased to answer them. Otherwise, I will reserve the balance of my time.
Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Greg Stillman, and I'm here on behalf of DRS Automotive and Dan Short. There are three assignments that the court has been asked to take up today. The one that I want to take up first is the one which is the one that I believe why this writ was granted perhaps in the first place, and that is whether or not fraud is required to be proven as part of a VCPA claim. We have never contended that it is, and in fact, the only reason why the VCPA claim was struck was because fraud was the basis for the VCPA claim that was asserted in this case. And it's very important for the court, before it makes any decision in this case, to go back and read the original complaint in this case, because much of the evidence that was recited by Mr. Somerville that is supposed to provide some basis for a VCPA claim was never alleged to be part of the VCPA claim in the complaint. Nor was there any evidence to amend that complaint or to suggest to the judge that somehow he should be considering these other charges about certification or the lack of or a misrepresentation regarding Mr. Short's experience. None of that was made as a basis for the VCPA claim. So, quite simply, number one, we do not contend that fraud is required in order to make out a VCPA claim. If, in fact, someone wants to allege that a misrepresentation was made regarding whether the engine was properly certified or whether Mr. Short had adequate experience to do this, they could have done that. They did not do that in this complaint. It was never alleged, and I invite the court to go back and read the complaint to confirm that. The second thing that I want to say about this is this. All of this evidence was considered by the jury as part of this breach of contract claim. All of this evidence about whether or not Lieutenant Thies lied when he got on the stand about how much was paid for the car. All of this evidence about whether Mr. Short lied about how much was paid for the car. All of that was considered by the jury over my objection at trial as part of the plaintiff's breach of contract claim. In other words, if the jury had believed for one moment that the only two witnesses with any direct knowledge about what was paid for this car were lying about it, the jury quite easily could have made a finding that the defendant breached its contract with the plaintiffs and could have found accordingly. They did not. The jury was essentially out long enough to elect a foreman and came back for with a defense verdict on all of these issues that now, notwithstanding the fact that the complaint doesn't do this, now they want to say form the basis for a BCPA claim. The important thing for the court to consider as part of this case is to go back and look and see what specifically has been alleged. As you know, fraud is required to be pled with particularity. The fraud claim in this case was basically that the defendants lied about how much was paid for the car. Now, with respect to this assignment of error about whether or not the judge inappropriately assessed the credibility of witnesses, let me just say this. First of all, that's not at all what happened. What Judge Clarkson did was to say that the only two witnesses who testified in this case, the only two witnesses with any knowledge about what was paid for this vehicle, both testified without contradiction that the vehicle was sold for $6,000. They both testified without contradiction to that effect. There was hearsay evidence that was admitted over our objection. I didn't assign cross error to it because I didn't think it was material. From a document from Craigslist that suggests that some email was sent from DRS to the Craigslist email account, and that for some reason the jury would be entitled to infer from that that Mr. Short had seen that the car had been previously advertised for a lesser amount. The amount was $2,000. Mr. Short testified unequivocally. He did not see that ad. Mr. Short testified unequivocally. He had no recollection of ever even sending an email. And in fact, Mr. Short testified that he searched his email accounts, and indeed Microsoft was even subpoenaed in the case to see if they could come up with any evidence that such an email was sent, and no one was able to produce it. The document itself, if you look at it, and it's in the appendix, I invite you to take a look at it, doesn't show anything. We don't know what that document shows because no witness from Craigslist or the custodian of that email account ever testified as to what it in fact shows. So all the jury was left to do was to speculate and infer. But the point that I want to leave the court with this morning is simply this. All of this evidence was considered as part of the plaintiff's breach of contract claim. And the jury considered it and returned a verdict in favor of the defendant. I can't imagine that if anyone really believed that Dan Short or a lieutenant in the United States Navy had purposely gotten up and perjured themselves about the price that was paid for that car, that they would have rendered a defense verdict in this case on the breach of contract claim when that is an essential part of the breach of contract claim that was alleged in the original complaint. This case could be tried again. The result would be no different. All of these theories of liability were asserted, argued at length to this jury, and they came back with the same result. So to suggest that now somehow there's some error in this record because the trial judge judged the credibility of the only two witnesses who had any knowledge about what was paid for the car is sheer fantasy. All Judge Clarkson was doing was to say there were only two witnesses that had any knowledge about the price of this car, and I have no reason not to believe them based upon the evidence. Based upon all of these arguments, Your Honor, and Your Honors, and specifically with respect to what is alleged in the original complaint, we ask that the verdict be affirmed.
Thank you.
Three points, Your Honor. As to the argument that the plaintiffs are limited to the proof of allegations set out in their complaint, I believe that is answered fully by the Colmore Realty case quoted at page 12 of our reply brief. The evidence of other violations was introduced without objection, and therefore there was a waiver of any objections. And not to enforce that waiver would deprive a plaintiff in a similar position of their opportunity to move for leave to amend pleadings to conform to the evidence. As to the breach of contract issue, the suggestion that the jury's verdict eliminates our VCPA and fraud case, there's simply no way to know from the general verdict why the jury rejected the breach of contract claim. The court instructed the jury to find a verdict for the defendants if the plaintiffs failed to prove either that there was a contract or that the defendant breached the contract. And it instructed that a contract must be both complete and reasonably certain, including all of the essential terms expressed in a clear and definite way. And it instructed that for a contract to exist, the minds of the parties must have met on every material term. There was no written agreement. There was a great deal of testimony about changes in the scope of work during the course of the project. Defendants' counsel argued to the jury that there was no meeting of the minds on the scope of the work. The jury may well have concluded that there simply was no complete and reasonably certain agreement, and the parties' minds did not meet on every material term, and if so, it had no opportunity to reach the question of whether there's a breach or not, and we've cited cases in our reply brief addressing that issue. And finally, on the suggestion that the trial court was bound by the testimony of two witnesses, this court said in Crowell against Duncan, cited in our opening brief at page 15, and this is page 503 of the opinion, that the testimony of two witnesses in that case, and I quote, is not conclusive, though there is no other direct evidence on that subject. Facts and circumstances may overcome the direct testimony. And in Commonwealth against Hudson, this is not cited in the briefs, this 265 Virginia 505, at pages 5, 12, and 13, this court said there is no distinction in the law between the weight or value to be given to either direct or circumstantial evidence. The finder of fact is entitled to consider all the evidence without distinction in reaching its determination. And in fact, circumstantial evidence often can be more persuasive than direct testimony because it is so much harder to fake. I have nothing further unless the court has questions.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Court is adjourned until 9 o'clock tomorrow morning.
All right.